Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. So what does it mean to be poor? Well, try this. The official poverty rate for a family of four is a little over $22,000 a year. That's about $430 a week for rent, food, gas, utilities, clothes, and anything else you need to live on. Again, just $430 a week for a family of four.
Now, we're talking about this because more data were released today from the 2010 census about poverty. Last week, we learned that one in six Americans, that's more than 15%, are living in poverty, the highest poverty rate since 1993. And we learned the total number of Americans living in poverty is now at an all-time high.
Today, we learned a few other things from the data. We learned that the recession has clobbered young adults particularly hard. We also learned about the poverty rate here in Massachusetts. While it's lower than the national average, it still rose a full percentage point in 2010 to 11.4%. So even though this state is doing better than much of the country, there are still some 750,000 people living in poverty here.
Behind these numbers are real people and real families trying to get by. So we wanted to begin our coverage today with a brief visit to a family that is working hard to stay just above the poverty line. About 3.5 years ago, I reported a series called The Vanishing Middle Class for WBUR. Back then, I met Sydney Fuller Jones, her husband Amos, and their twins in Dorchester. We're going to check in on how they're doing today. But first, here's a brief excerpt of what they told me back in 2007.
Is it on?
It's on right now.
And you're?
Jamari, the famous football player.
And how old are you?
Six.
It's football practice for Jamari Jones on a cool autumn evening in the Dorchester neighborhood of Boston. He's here with his twin sister, Naya, and his mother, Sydney Fuller Jones, who beams with pride as she watches the practice.
These little boys, they have heart. And we're talking about 5 and 6 year olds, so it warms my heart to see them out there.
But beyond her obvious pride, Sydney Fuller Jones is not pleased by her difficult financial circumstances.
It's been tough to try to keep our heads above water, falling behind in the mortgage, all our bills, to that matter. I mean, there was a point where our phone didn't stop ringing, and it was literally bill collectors.
Not long ago, Sydney Fuller Jones and her husband Amos had a toehold on the middle class ladder. Both of them work for the State Department of Public Health, and together earned about $80,000 a year, right in line with the median income for a family of four in Massachusetts. But when Amos got sick with kidney failure, it fell to Sydney to keep the family going. They fell behind on their bills, and it got so bad last year, they had to turn to an anti-poverty agency just to fill their oil tank. And it reminded Sydney of how life has changed since her childhood in the 1960s, when her mother was a school teacher and her father worked for the IRS.
We never wanted for anything. I never remember hearing my mother and father, you know, in heated discussions about bills.
So do you feel that a generation later, things are harder for you?
I think, you know, it's much more challenging than in my mother's and my father's era.
And why do you think that is?
It's the economy. It's grueling. I mean, everything is more extreme on every angle. Oil, food, you know? I mean, you go in the grocery store, what you used to come home with months ago, you will not come home today spending the same amount of money. It's trying times for us. It doesn't take, you know, the president of the United States to tell me what's going on with my economy in my pocket, because we know we're living it.
So that was Sydney Fuller Jones back in the fall of 2007.
How you doing?
Good to see
good,
you.
Good,
nice
good.
Nice to see you.
You too.
I did sign in and I have a badge.
Okay.
And this is her earlier this morning. Her life has not gotten easier. Sydney still has a job as an administrative assistant at the state medical lab in Jamaica Plain. But the big change in her life was the death of her husband, Amos, this past spring.
cardiac arrhythmia, and it was just, it was a devastating blow. What hit him fast and very hard, and they were unable to bring him back. Mm-hmm. But I'm numb. It seems like an eternity, but it's only been 4 or 5 months.
So Sydney Fuller-Jones is now a single mother raising her twins, who are now 9 years old, as well as a niece. Now, for a family of four, the poverty line is about $22,000 a year. Sydney earns about $40,000, so she's above the poverty line. Even so, she struggles to pay her bills and still depends on help from ABCD, a Boston-based anti-poverty agency.
We still face some of the challenges that, you know, we've faced in the past as far as, you know, making sure we eat and have a roof over our heads and, you know, meager clothes, meager means of clothes, just, you know, for our meager existence. It's a challenge. I was just speaking with someone yesterday, and we were talking about the middle class, and I'm like, you know, do we still exist? Pretty soon there may be a place where they'll have to create a new class because of all the hardships that families face. But every day there's something new, you know, there's another hurdle.
And you mentioned assistance. What kind of assistance are you dependent upon to make ends meet?
Well, mainly the one I always, you know, give high praises to is my fuel assistance, because I use heat, you know, all year round for hot water as well. And if we don't have oil, we don't have heat. And there are other avenues out there that I'm seeking, just like I said, to help to feed my children. And the funding for these programs, I can't see families doing without.
Without them, you wouldn't be able to make it.
It would be very difficult. It would be very difficult. Wouldn't want my kids to see me in that place, in that type of place.
Sydney, if you wouldn't mind, just walk me through. I mean, let's say you get a paycheck at the end of a 2-week period. How much of it gets spent on what? How much is left over?
I really don't see any, you know, physically hold any money in my hand. Everything's electronic, you know. So once it's electronically deposited into my accounts, then it's electronically gone to someone else. Some months are better than others. Some months it's like I make less than I pay out. Some months I break even, and some months there may be a penny or two for an extracurricular activity with my children. But I can't remember the last cost of living increase. You know, it's a challenge. It's challenging.
So last question. We're having a bit of a discussion today about the poverty level, about public policies that should or could be enacted to help people like you. What would your message be to political leaders, to the political establishment, to folks who hold the purse strings?
Until you've walked in my shoes, tread lightly on the decisions that you make, because the decisions that you make, you have to realize that you're in someone else's pocket. You're affecting so many lives, and people do continue to struggle no matter what.
Well, Sydney Fuller-Jones, thank you again for talking to us. We appreciate it, and I wish you all the luck in the world.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Sydney Fuller-Jones lives in Dorchester. We spoke to her this morning. When we come back, the fight against poverty in Massachusetts and the Northeast. We'll be joined by Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders and your calls. Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about poverty across the country and what the new census numbers tell us about the state of poverty here in Massachusetts and across the Northeast. There are now more people living below the poverty line in this country than ever before.
Now, we want to hear from you. We just heard from Sydney Fuller-Jones, a widowed mother of three, struggling to get by on an income that places her, well above the poverty line. So what does that tell you about the challenges facing working families? Are you struggling in this economy? How should policymakers respond? Give us a call and join the conversation, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston.
Anthony, we'll be talking to Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders in just a moment. But first, joining us to give us some context for this discussion is Noah Berger. He is president of the Massachusetts Budget and Policy Center. Noah Berger, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
So last week, the Census Bureau released data showing that the national poverty level is currently at a level not seen since the early 1990s. Today, we have more detailed data regarding the individual states. So what did we find for Massachusetts?
Well, in Massachusetts, we saw the story that's been consistent throughout this recession, which is, like across the country, many families in Massachusetts are struggling and have very difficult times because of the recession. Our poverty rate is a little bit over 11% in Massachusetts. On the other hand, we are, as a state, doing better than the rest of the country. Nationally, the poverty rate is over 15%. So that's been our pattern as a relatively higher income state, partly because we're one of the best educated states in the country. Our workforce, we have more people with college degrees than any other state. And as a result, we tend to be a somewhat higher income state and not to see poverty reach as high of levels as other states are seeing these days.
Nevertheless, the poverty rate did increase by a full percentage point here in Massachusetts. And just to remind people, the poverty line for a family of four in the United States, I believe, is $22,000 a year. We heard just before the break Anthony's conversation with Sydney Fuller Jones. She's a widowed mother of three. She actually has an income that places her well above the poverty line, but she's still struggling to make ends meet. She has no money left at the end of every month, regardless of what her paycheck is. So what does her story tell you about the challenges families are facing?
Yeah, the challenges families face are enormous, and it's been a longer-term trend. One of the saddest facts about poverty is that it's not just gone up during this recession, that really for most of the last decade, poverty was increasing. There were only a couple of years out of the last 10 when we didn't see the national poverty rate increase. And a large part of that was how income growth didn't occur in America in that time period. For most low and middle income families, there was virtually no income growth over that entire decade. Even when the economy was growing, even in the good times, when you did see significant income growth at the top end of the income spectrum, we didn't see that in the middle and bottom ends. As a result, we saw very little progress against poverty in the good times. And then, of course, when a recession hits, we see much higher rates of poverty, and other middle-class families didn't see their incomes rise, so they get that same squeeze that low-income folks do.
And briefly, what about other New England states?
It varies in New England. We saw comparable increases in much of New England. Rhode Island has the highest level of poverty in New England at about 14%. New Hampshire, which is a largely suburban state, has a lower poverty rate at 8.3%.
So overall, looking regionally at New England, as an economist, what are these numbers telling you about how our region is faring?
I think it tells you two things. One is no region can escape a national recession like the one that we've had. That is, Massachusetts and New England are generally in better shape economically than the rest of the country. But when we have a national recession that is, by any measure, the worst since the Great Depression, we see poverty increases across the country and even in states like New England. That Massachusetts, for example, until this most recent data, had not seen significant increases in poverty, but now we are.
That's Noah Berger. He's president of the Massachusetts Budget and Policy Center. Noah, if you could just please stand by for a moment.
Happy to.
And Meghna, let's turn now to one of those policymakers who've been concerned for many years about poverty and has some pretty strong opinions about what needs to happen. Joining us now from his office in Washington, D.C. is Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. He's an independent. And Senator Sanders, great to have you on Radio Boston. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
So we just heard from Noah Berger about what he thinks these latest census figures signify to him. What do they mean to you?
Well, I just caught the tail end of his remarks, but he's certainly right that when you have a terrible, terrible recession in which 16% of our people are unemployed or underemployed, obviously no part of the country is going to be immune to that, and certainly not New England. What it means to me, and we just had a hearing on this last week, what it means to me is that at a time when poverty is increasing, and in fact it is higher today than it has been for a very, very long time, it means that we cannot turn our backs from a public policy perspective on some of the most vulnerable people in this country. One of the things that I get a little bit disturbed about is that because low-income people, by and large, don't vote in very large numbers, and by definition, they don't make terribly large campaign contributions. They don't make any campaign contributions. they're basically ignored in the political process. And the only time that we hear about poor people is when they're being beaten up by right-wingers who want to blame every problem in this country on low-income people. But I think, especially when we understand that in the United States we have the very dubious distinction of having by far the highest rate of childhood poverty of any major country on earth. We're somewhere about 21.5%. Denmark, which is doing best in the world, is below 4%. Many of the leading European countries are below 10%. When we are at 21.5%, it is not only of concern in terms of what's happening to these kids today in terms of nutrition, in terms of health care, in terms of education, in terms of general nurturing. It is of real concern about the future of this country.
Senator, I talked to you about this a few years back, and I want you just to get an idea of what you're seeing in your home state of Vermont, which one doesn't necessarily associate with as an area of the country with urban-type problems. You set up an opportunity for your constituents to send you stories about the stresses of the working class.
Absolutely.
You received a lot of compelling stories. I wonder if you could just tell me what you're hearing today from them.
Well, what you're hearing is the situation remains very dismal. And the reason that I did that, we just simply sent an email out to my list and said, hey, we're in the midst of a terrible recession. What's going on in your lives? Because I don't know that the corporate media necessarily talks about those issues. And what we heard was horrible. I mean, really, honestly, I mean, I read some of those responses on the floor of the Senate, and it was hard for me to read more than a few at a time because they just really overwhelm you. You hear about working people who had put away money in order to have a secure retirement. That money disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
I remember one guy who wrote to me and said, my father lives in Connecticut, and I want to drive down there to visit him, but and he's dying. I don't have the money to do that. I remember a woman writes, she says, my husband is out cutting wood in the backyard, because he has a bad back and he's in his mid-60s, he shouldn't be doing that, but we don't have adequate money to provide to pay for oil bills. You hear from young people who said, you know, I went to college and I borrowed deeply to go to college with the hope of getting out, getting a good job, maybe the first time somebody in my family went to college, and there's no job there, or I'm working at a low-wage job, and I can't pay off my college debts. Those are the kinds of stories you hear.
Yeah. Senator Sanders, stand by. We've got some callers and some folks who I think you'd be happy to hear from and would like to hear from you. Let's go to Sam, who's calling from Lexington. Hi, Sam.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. First, thank you, Senator, for the great work you do in Washington. I'm not a big fan of government that we have now, but you're one person that really does speak truth to power, and I salute you.
Thanks, sir.
I'd like to say that, you know, the whole pattern of decreasing distribution of the resources is an old pattern. I mean, I've been losing income for over 30 years now, and it really started in the Reagan years.
Uh-huh.
And when you really look at the hard numbers, the standard of living has been dropping for decades.
Yes.
And it's just particularly bad now because the wealthy have just been getting away with murder. And I think it's important to really start, you know, point the fingers. There are structural reasons for things being the way they are now. And the key thing that I see is the predominance of FIRE, you know, finance, investment, real estate, dominating our economy.
Yep.
And really raping the rest of us people who are just working to make a living, and they're getting away with bandits, and these people should be in jail.
But, Sam, let me just stop you there, because you're talking about a couple of different things, and the thing that I'd like to hear Senator Sanders respond to is this structural thing that did seem to take root in the mid-70s
Even pre-Reagan.
Yeah, but talk about that. How do we address that?
Here's what we got, and Sam is absolutely right. Anyone who thinks that this problem started under Bush or under Obama is absolutely missing the point. What we're in now is a horrendous recession, which, as Sam implies, was caused by the greed and recklessness, and in my view, I agree with him, illegal behavior of people on Wall Street who were selling worthless products. It exploded, and we are where we are today. But to see the decline of the middle class, to see the decline of real wages, you got to go back to the mid-1970s, even pre-Reagan.
Yeah.
I think my judgment. Others may disagree with me. I think Sam's point is a good point. Up until a few years ago, something like 40% of the profits in America were in our financial institutions and Wall Street. That's a huge number. And you ask yourself, what role is Wall Street playing in terms of the productive economy? So you're seeing a collapse in our manufacturing jobs. We have lost 50,000 factories in the last 10 years, millions of good-paying jobs, yet these guys on Wall Street are speculating and gambling with unbelievable sums of money, getting huge amounts of money for relatively small numbers of people. So I think that transition from an economy that actually produced real goods to a speculative gambling economy led by our friends on Wall Street certainly is a very important factor. Another factor is our, in my view, and we're just, it's being debated right now on the floor of the Senate, is our trade policy. I understand that every major newspaper in America thinks free trade is great. All of the TV networks think free trade is great, but I don't. I think that the trade agreements that we have established for the last many years, starting, you know, with Reagan and Bush 1 and Clinton and up to Obama, have basically been written by corporate America with the goal of being able to shut down companies in America and move to China and pay people there a fraction of the wages they were paying in America. So I think we've just seen a study from the Economic Policy Institute. Free trade with China in the last 10 years cost us something like 2.8 million jobs. NAFTA has cost us jobs. And if you go to any store in America, it is harder and harder to find products made in the United States of America.
Senator, let me ask you about something, though, that you're a big proponent of. And this is by way of maybe pushing back just a little bit here. Back in the 50s, poverty rates reached above 20%. A decade later, we had a war on poverty. Now, we noticed that a recent Pew Research Center survey found that for the first time in 15 years, a majority of Americans oppose more government spending to help the poor. So my question to you and liberals like you, who
I'm a progressive, please.
Progressives like you, I appreciate the difference. But doesn't that suggest that your particular message isn't being heard anymore? And if not, why not?
Well, that's a whole other story. I mean, we are seeing. Well, we can talk about that one for a while. I mean, you're seeing a right wing growth of people like Rick Perry, who, to my mind, are really quite extremist. Who very often are misstating reality are now prominent candidates for president of the United States. You have a media which I think to a significant degree does not talk about the real issues facing the American people. I think the reality is that when your middle class is collapsing and people are really, really hurting, they are gonna say, hey, I don't want to spend any more money on anything. I don't want to spend money on teachers. I don't want to spend money on poor people. I don't want to spend money on foreign policy. I can understand that.
So compassion fatigue, it almost sounds like you're talking about.
Yeah, I think so. But one of the things that people don't know is you say to people, well, you know, one of the reasons we are in a deficit right now is you're spending huge sums of money on the military. What do you think about that? We have given huge tax breaks to the rich. We have seen a substantial decline in revenue coming into this country from corporations. Do you know about that? Well, it hasn't been talked about.
Yeah. Senator Sanders, one more call, if you would, from Susan from Waltham. Hi, Susan. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you. This is a great show. Senator Sanders, I just adore you. You're my hero. Thank you so much for your the one shining light through the whole situation. And I just thank you for bearing the standard for all of us and speaking for us. I'm a single mother, and as my children were growing up, I still have some young child at home and a teenager. But, you know, I thought, oh, if I get my college degree, and then later I got a master's degree, and I said, oh, if I get my education, I will pull my family out of poverty. And, you know, I always have worked full time. I got my education. I've tried to be a great mother, but we've lived in poverty my children's entire lives. And to reach this point now, and middle age, still living below the poverty line, my education has really gotten me nowhere. I'm working a minimum wage job because it's the only job I could get after I got my graduate degree. And I'm grateful to have a job, but it's very discouraging and disheartening to know that I am honest, hardworking, educated, and put my nose to the grindstone every day, and that there really isn't any hope to climb out of this situation, and I see it just getting worse. But
Susan, let me let Bernie Sanders, because our time is running out. Bernie Sanders,
well, first of all,
can you?
I want to say to Susan, I very much appreciate her having the courage to get on a radio show and talk about that. And Susan, what I want to tell you, and my before I married my wife, she was a single mom raising three kids, and I think would have said the same thing. Thank you for having the courage to say what you did, and you're not alone. I mean, the tragedy of the moment is that there are millions of honest, hardworking people who have gone to college. Some of them are desperately trying to pay off their college loans of years ago and are not able to find the work that they are capable of doing and the income that they should be earning. And that speaks to the absolute need for Congress today and with the president's leadership of creating a real jobs program which will put many, many, many millions of people back to work. And God only knows there is more than enough work to do in America in terms of education. We should not be firing teachers. We should be hiring more teachers and child care workers. In terms of health care, we need to greatly expand our primary health care capabilities. Infrastructure, my God, how much work needs to be done. Energy, we have a huge amount of work to be done. So it's not that we don't have the work to be done, but we have to develop public policy here. We have to take on right-wing Republicans whose zest in life seems to be wanting to cut Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, and we have to put our people back to work.
Bernie Sanders, independent senator from Vermont, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it, and good luck to you.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Goodbye. Noah Berger, thanks for sticking around. You heard Bernie Sanders there at the end making a pitch for the president's job bill. My guess is you would favor that. Are you at all optimistic that something useful can come out given the current political climate in Washington?
Yeah, I think there are two very big issues happening in Washington. One is whether or not the country will make a commitment to a strong jobs package. And for all of the reasons we've been talking about, probably nothing is more important for helping the middle class and helping to reduce poverty than putting people to work and ending the recession. But the second, which may even have bigger, longer-term effects, is this debate over closing the national deficit. And as we know, there's a commission that's now been set up to look at that and try to close about $2 trillion, a little bit more than that, of the deficit. And they've already agreed, Congress has, to about $1 trillion in budget cuts, which will primarily hit low and middle income people who, as we've talked about, have taken the brunt of most of the problems of the past decade and are struggling the most in this recession. The question is, where does the other trillion or so dollars come from? And it'll simply be a choice about whether that comes from allowing some of the tax cuts to expire or making sure that higher income people don't take advantage of loopholes and deductions. There are a number of things that could be done so that the second trillion is paid for essentially with tax increases or the elimination of tax cuts for the higher income taxpayers who've done the best over this last decade. And that's going to be an important policy choice.
Well, that's Noah Berger. He's president of the Massachusetts Budget and Policy Center. We've been talking about poverty and what to do about it. Listeners, the conversation continues at RadioBoston.org. Noah Berger, thank you so much for coming in. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
We'll be back after a short break. Up next, some arts ideas for your weekend and a conversation with Rhode Island musicians Brown Bird. Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.